Hello and welcome to this archive recording of a live-streamed exploring session I produced at the beginning of the plague outbreak in the year of our Cat Lord 2020. Beware the Cat by William Baldwin is a most excellent book, which I have since performed readings of and am currently rehearsing a solo show of. These exploring sessions, five in total, were live-streamed in the afternoon on my personal YouTube channel, because Beyond didn't actually have one at that particular moment, so I am finally archiving it on this stream and creating a Beware the Cat playlist while I'm at it. Beyond some minor cuts, I'm leaving the recordings mostly as recorded, with much of the blah 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 in place. There are errors in my reading and initial thoughts, but that's part of the process. Till next time, I leave you with Past Robert. Hello and welcome to the Beyond Podcast Live. I am your host, Robert Crichton, for this reading of Beware the Cat. We're into the second part of Master Streamer's oration. And Master Streamer is the storyteller telling the story to the author of the actual text, allegedly. So the background to this story, if you've missed the first couple of episodes, is there are a number of people gathered at night discussing whether animals have more than just basic animal low cunning, whether they actually have intelligence and can talk to each other and have more to them than meets the eye. And Master Streamer tells the assembled company of his experiences, and in the last couple of episodes, he relates stories he was told by other people. In this episode, we're going to go deeper. Master Streamer has been bothered by cats outside his window, on the leads outside, on the roofs outside his chamber, and these have been disturbing him, and so he decides he's going to do something about that and try some experiments. And this is where the story really connects for me, because I have in the past done live readings of I've done Sherlock Holmes stories and other material from the late 19th century, early 20th century, M.R. James, those kind of stories, a bit of H.G. Wells as well, where there is a moment when the experimenter or the protagonist does something inherently a bit foolish and goes through quite a terrifying experience, and you're going to be getting a little bit of that. Now, there's a very much a Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde quality to what's going to come up. And I think there are a couple of warnings I should give out to the listener at home straight away. So, first of all, don't try this at home. Really, do not try the recipe that he is about to attempt. It is not only cruel to animal kind, it is revolting. So, don't do that. There's an interesting question of tone for what's about to come up. Is it supposed to be horrific and terrifying and dark? Or is it actually supposed to be a bit funny? And I haven't answered that question yet, and we'll see where we go. In terms of tone, a lot of these texts do dance around tonally. And so I don't necessarily have an answer from this first play around with Beware the Cat. If you've listened to the podcast, you will hear connections with some of the texts that we've done before. Today very much connects a couple of times with the play Gammagurton's Needle, which has its nativity around about the same time as this. And it does feel at one point very much like this play is almost quoting an incident from Gammagurton's Needle from the end of Act 1. I may mention what that is afterwards. I don't want to spoil that moment. Gammagurton's Needle does feature a cat. Our full cast audio adaptation of Gammagurton's Needle does not really feature the cat in its totality. Those bits got trimmed because it didn't quite work for audio. But it's all there in the spoilers episodes if you want to cross-reference with a bit of cat action, because there are some really fun bits in that. And there does seem to have been a whole cat thing around the 1552-53 point when all these things are all coming together. It's an interesting question as to why that all happens. Again, trigger warning for those who might be of the ecumenical mind. This is a very partisan book. I'm always doing plays. I always forget that this is a book. So it is a Protestant text, so it is very anti-Catholic. And the pun there, of course, is Catholic. Beware the cat. The Catholic spies being the cats all around you all the time. Can you trust a cat sitting in your parlour? Can you trust your friend who claims to be on your side? Lots of paranoia there, which plays out throughout this period since the beginning of the English Reformation. So, as I say, don't try this at home. That said, the recipe is effectively available online. If you are a witch or a warlock, do let us know whether you believe this that's coming up, which is frankly quite disgusting. There is a little bit of a connection here again with the comedy stylings of John Heywood when talking about various medical things, various ingredients for things, which turns up in the four P's as well with the apothecary in that. And there are certain terms and things that are used there as well. I'm going to say now that I will probably stumble over some of these, and I will just try and make them sound, I think, probably more comic than serious. But I don't know. We shall see where we go. But this is the second part of Master Streamer's Oration. Ere I had been long in this contemplation, the cats, whose crying the night before had been occasion of all that I have told you, were assembled again in the leads which I spake of, where the dead men's quarters were set up, and after the same sort as they did the night before, one sung in one tune, and another in another, even such another service as my lord's chapel upon the scaffold song before the king. They observed no musical chords, neither diatessaron, diapente, nor diapason. And yet I ween I lie. For one cat groaning as a bear doth when dogs be let slip to him, thralled out so low and loud a bass, that in comparison of another cat, which, crying like a young child, squealed out the shrieking treble, it might be well counted a double diapason. Wherefore, to the intent I might perceive the better the cause of their assembly, and by their gestures perceive part of their meaning, I went softly and fair into a chamber which hath a window into the same leads. And in the dark, standing closely, I viewed through the trellis, as well as I could, all their gestures and behaviour. And I promise you, it was a thing worth the marking to see what countenances, what becks, yea, and what order was among them. For one cat, which was a mighty big one, grey-haired, bristle-bearded, and having broad eyes which shone and sparkled like two stars, sat in the midst. And on either side of her sat another, and before her stood three more, whereof one mewed continually, save when the great cat groaned, and ever when the great cat had done, this mewing cat began again, first stretching out her neck, and as it were making bishens to them which sat. And oftentimes in the midst of this cat's mewing, all the rest would suddenly, each one in his tune, brayed forth, and incontinently hushed again, as it were laughing at somewhat which they heard the other cat declare. After this sort, I beheld them from 10 till it was 12 o'clock. clock, at which time, whether it were vessel in the kitchen under or some board in the printing house hard by, I cannot tell, but somewhat fell with such a noise that all the cats gat them up upon the house, and I, fearing lest any arose to see what was fallen, they would charge me with the hurling down of it if they found me there, I whipped into my chamber quickly. And finding my lamp burning, I set me down upon my bed, and devised upon the doings of these cats, casting all manner of ways what might be conjectured thereof to know what they meaned. And by, I deemed that the grey cat, which had sat in the midst, was the chief, and sat as a judge among the rest, and that the cat, which continually mewed, declared some matter, or made account of her to her of somewhat. By means whereof I was straight caught with such a desire to know what she had said. Yea, I could not sleep of all that night, but lay devising by what means I might learn to understand them, and calling to mind that I had read in Altus Magnus works, a way how to be able to understand bird voices. I made no more to do, but sought in my library for the little book intituled De Virtutibus Animalium, etc., and greedily read it over, and when I came to Cives Foces Aeum Intelligere, oh, Lord, how glad I was! And when I had thoroughly marked the description of the medicine, and considered with myself the nature and power of everything therein, and how and upon what it wrought, I devised thereby how we part of those things, and addition of other like virtue and operation, to make a philtre to serve for my purpose. And as soon as restless Phoebus was come up out of the smoking sea, and with shaking his golden-coloured beams, which were all the night long in Thestis' moist bosom, had dropped of his silver sweat into Herde's dry lap, and kissing fair Aurora with glowing mouth, had driven from their adventurer Lucifer, and was mounted so high to look upon Europa, yea, for at the height of Milan steeple he spied me through the glass window, lying on my bed. Up I rose and got me abroad to seek for such things as I might serve for my earnest business, which I went about. And because you be all my friends that are here, I will hide nothing from you, but declare from point to point how I behaved myself, both in making and taking of my philtre. If thou wilt understand, saith Albert, the voices of birds or beasts, take two in thy company, and upon Simon and Jude's day, early in the morning, get thee with hounds into a certain wood, and the first beast that thou meetest take and prepare with the heart of a fox, and thou shalt have thy purpose. And whosoever thou kissest shall understand them as well as thyself. Because his writing here is doubtful, because he saith, quodam nimis, a certain wood, and because I knew three men, not many years past, which while they went about this hunting, were so frayed, whether an evil spirit, or we their own imagination, I cannot tell, but home they came with their hair standing on end, and some of them have been the worse since, and the hounds likewise, and seeing it was so long to St. Jude's day, therefore I determined not to hunt at all. But a conjecturing that the best that they should take was an hedgehog, which at that time nature full of natural heat, and therefore the principal parts being eaten, must needs expulse gross matters, and subtle the brain, as by the like power it engendereth fine blood. So helpeth it much against the gout and the cramp. I got me forth toward St. John's Wood, and whereas not 2 days before I had seen one, and the lucky and unlucky chance, by the way, as I went, I met with hunters, who had that morning killed a fox and three hares, who, I thank them, gave me an hare, and the fox's whole body except the case, and six smart lashes with a sip, because, wherein I did mean no harm, I asked them if they had seen anywhere any hedgehog that morning. And here, save that my tale is otherwise long, I would show you in my mind of this wicked, superstitious observation of foolish hunters, for they be like as seemeth to me papists, which for speaking of good and true words punish good and honest men. Are not apes, owls, cuckoos, bears, and urchins God's good creatures? Why then, is it not lawful to name them? If they say it bringeth evil luck in the game, then are they unlucky, idolatrical, miscreant infidels, and have no true belief in God's providence, I beshrew their superstitious hearts, for my buttocks bear the burden of their mischief and their whips, and yet I thank them again for the fox and the hare which they gave me. For with those two hounds at my girdle I went a-hunting, till indeed under a hedge in a hole of the earth by the root of a hollow tree I found an hedgehog with a bushel of crabs about him, whom I straight killed with my knife, saying, Shaul Shawashameth Gorgona Liscond, and with the other beasts hung him at my girdle, and came homeward as fast as I could hie. But when I came in the close, besides Ibslington, commonly called St. John's Field, a kite, belike very hungry, spied at my back the skinless fox, and thinking to have had a morsel, strake at it, and that so eagerly that one of his claws was entered so deep that before he could loose it, I drew out my knife and killed him, saying, Io shellig hoto theca iscod, and to make up the mess, brought him home with the rest. And ere I had laid them out of my hand, came Thomas, whom you heard of before, and brought me a cat, which for doing evil turns they had that morning caught in a snare set for her 2 days before, which for the skin's sake, being flayn, was so exceeding fat, that after I had taken some of the grease, the innards and the head, to make, as I made him believe, a medicine for the gout, they purboiled the rest, and at night roasted and fast with good herbs, I did eat up every morsel, and was as good meat as was or could be eaten. But now mark. For when Thomas was departed with his cat, I shut my chamber doors to men, and flayed my urchin, wishing oft for Dr. Nicholas or some other expert physician to make the dissection for the better knowledge of the anatomy. The flesh I washed clean and put it in a pot with white wine, melisophilus or messilla, commonly called balm, rosemary, neat's tongue, 4 parts of the first and 2 of the second. I made a broth and set it on the fire and boiled it, setting on a lembic with a glass at the end over the mouth of the pot to receive the water that distilled from it, in the seething whereof I had a pint, a pottle of wine, which I put in the pot. Then, because it was about the solecium estivale, and that in confections the hours of the planets must for the better operation be observed, I tarried till 10 o'clock before dinner, what time Mercury began his lucky reign, and then I took a piece of the cat's liver, and a piece of the kidney, a piece of the milt, and the whole heart, the fox's heart and lights, the hare's brain, the kite's maw, and the urchin's kidneys. All these I beat in a mortar together till it was small, and then made a cake of it, and baked it upon an hot stone till it was dry like bread. And this, while this was baking, I took 7 parts of the cat's grease, as much of her brain, with 5 hairs of her beard, 3 black and 2 grey, 3 parts of the fox's grick, as much of her brain, with the hooves of his left feet, like the the portion of the urchin's grease and brain with his stones, all the kite's brain, all the marrow of her bones, the juice of her heart, her upper beak and the middle claw of her left foot, the fat of the hare's kidneys and the juice of his right shoulder bone. All these things I pun together in a mortar by the space of an hour, and then I put it in a cloth and hung it over a basin in the sun, out of which dropped within 4 hours after about half a pint of oil, very fair and clear. Then I took the galls of all these beasts, and the kites too, and served them likewise, keeping the liquor that dropped from them. At 12 o'clock, what time the sun began his planetical dominion, I went to dinner, and I ate none. Save the boiled urchin. My bread was the cake mentioned afore. My drink was the distillation of the urchin's broth, which was exceeding strong and pleasant, both in taste and savour. After that I dined well. My head waxed so heavy that I could not chase but sleep. And after that I waked again, which was within an hour. My mouth and my nose purged exceedingly. Such yellow, white, and tawny matters as I never saw before, nor thought that any such had been in man's body. When a pint of this gear was come forth, my room ceased, and my head and all my body was in exceeding good temper, and 1,000 things which I had not thought of in 20 years before came so freshly to my mind as if they had been then presently done, heard, or seen. Whereby I perceived that my brain, chiefly the nuque memorative, was marvellously well purged. My imagination also was so fresh. Yea, by and by I could show probable reason what and in what sort and upon what matter everything which I had taken wrought and the cause why. Then to be occupied after my sleep, I cast away the carcass of the fox and of the kite, with all the garbage, both of them and the rest, saving the tongues and the ears, which were very necessary for my purpose. And thus I prepared them. I took all the ears and scaled of the hare, then stamped them in a mortar, and when they were all like a dry jelly, I put them in rue, fennel, loach, and leek blades, of each a handful, and punned them afresh. Then divided I all the matter in 2 equal parts, and made 2 little pillows, and stuffed them therewith. And when Saturn's dry hour of dominion approached, I fried these pillows in good oil olive, and laid them hot to mine ears, to each ere one, and kept them hereto till 9 o'clock at night, which help exceedingly to comfort my understanding power. But because, as I perceived the cell perceptible of my brain intelligible, was yet too gross, by means that the filmy panicle coming from dua mater made to straight opulations by engrossing the pores and conduits imaginative, I devised to help that with this gargarastical fume whose subtle ascension is wonderful. I took the cat, the foxes, and the kite's tongue, and sod them in wine well near to the jelly. Then took I them out of the wine, and put them in a mortar, and added to them of new cat's dung, 1 ounce of mustard seed, garlic and pepper as much, and when they were beating incorporated, I made lozenges and trossics thereof. And at 6 o'clock at night, what time the sun's dominion began again, I supped we thereat of the meat which I left at dinner, and when Mercury's reign approached, which was within 2 hours after, I drank a great draught of my stilled water, and anointed all my head over with wine and oil before described, and with the water which came out of the gulls, I washed mine eyes, And because no humours should ascend into my head by evaporation of my reins through the sheenbone, I took an ounce of al-kakengi in powder, which I had, for a like purpose not 2 days before, bought at the apothecary's, and therewith rubbed and chafed my back from the neck down to the middle, and heating in a frying pan my pillows afresh and laid them to mine ears, and tied a kerchief about my head, and with my lozenges and trussics in a box, I went out amongst the servants. Among whom was a shrewd boy, a very crack rope, that needs would know what was in my box. And I, to sauce him after his sauciness, called them presciential pills, affirming that whoso might eat one of them should not only understand wonders, but also prophecy after them. Whereupon the boy was exceeding earnest in entreating me to give him one. And when at last, very loathly as it seemed, I granted his request, he took a lozenge, put it in his mouth, and chewed it apace, by means whereof, when the fume ascended, he began to spattle and spit, saying, "By God's bones, he's a cat's turd!" At this the company laughed apace, and so did I too, verifying it to be as he said, and that he was a prophet. But that he might not spew too much by imagination, I took a lozenge in my mouth and kept it under my tongue, showing thereby that it was not evil. While this pastime endured, methought I heard one cry with a loud voice, "What? Isegrim?" And therefore I asked whose name was Isegrim, and saying that one did call him, but they said that they knew none of that name, nor heard any that did call. "No," quoth I, "for it called still. Hear you nobody? Hear you nobody? Who is that that calls so loud?" "We heard nothing but a cat," quoth they, "which mews above in the leads." When I saw it was so indeed, and that I understood what the cat said, glad was I as any man alive, and taking my leave of them, as though I would to bed straight, I went into my chamber, for it was past 9 o'clock, and because the hour of Saturnus' cold dominion approached, I put on my gown and got me privily to the place in the which I had viewed the cats the night before. And when I had settled myself where I might conveniently hear and see all things done in the leads where this cat cried still for Isegrim, I put into my two nose-thrills, two trussicues, and into my mouth two lozenges, one above my tongue, the other under, and put off my left shoe, because of Jupiter's proquination, and laid the foxtail under my foot. And to hear the better, I took off my pillows, which stopped mine ears, and then listened and viewed as attentively as I could. But I warrant you, ye pinnacle or filthy rhyme, ye lieth within the bottom of mine ear-hole, from whence little vainscree the sounds to the senses, was with this medicine in my pillows so purged and parched, or at least dried, that the least moving off the air, whether stroke with breath of issuing creatures which we call voices, or with the moving of dead, as wind, waters, trees, carts, falling of stones, etc., which are named noises, sounded so shrill in my ear by reverberation of my fined films, that the sound of them altogether was so disordered and monstrous that I could discern no one from other, save only the harmony of the moving of the spheres, which noise excelled all other as much both in pleasantness and shrill highness of sound as the zodiac itself surmounteth all other creatures in attitude of place. For in comparison of the basest of this noise, which is the moving of Saturn by means of his large compass, the highest voices of birds and the straightest whistling of the wind, or any other organ pipes whose sounds I heard confused together, appeared by but a low bass. And yet was those an high treble to the voice of beasts, to which, as a mean, the running of rivers was a tenor, and the boiling of the sea, and the cataracts of all gulfs thereof a goodly bass, and the rashing, brissing, and falling of the clouds a deep diapason. While I hearkened to this broil, labouring to discern both voices and noises asunder, I heard such a mixture as I think was never in Chaucer's house of fame, for there was nothing within an hundred mile of me done on any side, for from so far but no farther the air may come because of obliquation, but I heard it as well as if I had been by it, and could discern all voices, but by means of noises understand none. Lord, what do women made in their beds? Some scolding, some laughing, some weeping, some singing to their sucking children, which made a woeful noise with their continual crying. And one shrewd wife, a great way off, I think at St. Albans, called her husband cuckold so loud and shrilly that I heard that plain, and would fain have I heard the rest, but could not, by means of barking of dogs, grunting of hogs, walling of cats, rumbling of rats, gaggling of geese, humming of bees, rousing of bucks, gaggling of ducks, singing of swans, ringing of pans, crowing of cocks, sewing of socks, cackling of hens, scrabbling of pins, peeping of mice, trulling of dice, calling of frogs and toads in the bogs, chirping of crickets, shutting of wickets, shrieking of owls, flitting of fowls, routing of knaves, snorting of slaves, farting of churls, fizzling of girls, with many things else, as ringing of bells, counting of coins, mounting of groins, whispering of lovers, springling of plovers, groaning and spewing, baking and brewing, scratching and rubbing, watching and shrugging, with such a sort of commixed noises as would deaf any man to have heard, much more me, seeing that the panicles of mine ears were with my medicine made so fine and stiff, and that by the temperate heat of the things therein, that like a tabor dried before the fire, or else a lute string by heat shrunk nearer, they were incomparably amended in receiving and yielding the shrillness of any touching sounds. While I was earnestly hearkening, as I said, to hear the woman, minding nothing else, the greatest bell in St. Bartolph's steeple, which was hard by, was tolled for some rich body that then lay in passing, the sound whereof came with such a rumble into mine ear that I thought all the devils in hell had broken loose and were come about me, and was so afraid therewith, that when I felt the foxtail under my foot, which through fear I had forgotten, I deemed it had been the devil indeed. And therefore I cried out as loud as ever I could, "The devil! The devil! The devil!" But when some of the folk raised with my noise had sought me in my chamber and found me not there, they went seeking about, calling one to another, "Where is he? Where is he? I cannot find Master Streamer." Which noise and stir of them was so great in mine ears, and passing man's common sound, that I thought they had been devils indeed, which sought and asked for me. Wherefore I crept close into a corner of the chimney and hid me, saying many good prayers to save me from them. And because their noise was so terrible that I could not abide it, I thought best to stop mine ears, thinking thereby I should be the less afraid. And as I was there about, a crow, which belight was by, nodding asleep on the chimney top, fell down into the chimney over my head, whose flittering in the fall made such a noise that when I felt his feet upon my head, I thought that the devil had been come indeed and seized upon me. And when I cast up my hand to save me and therewith touched him, he called me knave in his language, after such a sort that I swooned for fear. By that I was come to myself again. He was flown from me into the chamber roof, and there he sat all night. Then took I my pillows and stopped mine ears for the rumble that the servants made. I took for the devils, it was so great and shrill. And I had no sooner put them on, but by and by I heard it was the servants which sought for me, and that I was deceived through my clearness in hearing. For the bell which put me in all this fear, for which I have never loved bells since, told still, and I perceived well enow what it was. And seeing that the servants would not leave calling and seeking till they found me, I went down unto them, and feigned that a cat had been in my chamber and frayed me. Whereupon they went to bed again, and I to mine own place. And that ends the second oration of Master Streamer. And that really was very fun to do. I do like the list speech. You get it in a lot of plays. And it is the kind of business that I as a storyteller will actually put in my own stuff. Not necessarily to the degree as here, but I try to give it good guns. And I can really see this sequence, this whole oration working very, very well as a piece of storytelling, actually. Lots of cuts to make for a live event. In a way that actually I found the first oration was a bit trickier. That might need a little more adaptation in my mind, but there's part of me that is always thinking ahead as to how to turn these into stage shows. It has been done. There was a production last couple of years, which has been recorded and exists out there, though I don't think for general viewing at the moment. So it is very doable, but I'm thinking of this more as an individual storyteller, that I could create a really quite fun show with this. And but the problem is with every single text I've looked at, they all work that way, and the prose and verse, non-dramatic prose and verse, is just so performable. So I really enjoyed that. I don't know if you did. Tomorrow we move into the third oration. I don't know precisely how far we're going to get through that tomorrow. And then we'll conclude on Friday. That is it for today. Thank you very much for listening.
And that was my Plague Year exploration of Beware the Cat by William Baldwin. Didn't I sound so young? If you'd like to hear more from this text, you're in luck, as not only are there a host of readings and discussions around this text, but I'm also working on a solo production right now. If you'd like it to come to your area of the United Kingdom, there's a link in the show description about how to get in touch. You'll also find there are links to all the audio recordings and discussions of the text available now. And if you like generally what we do, support our work at patreon.com/beyondshakespeare, or you can throw us a one-off bonus at ko-fi.com/beyondshakespeare. Goodbye.